Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Okay, so today we're looking at some really interesting study materials all about the technical language of film and TV. Our goal here isn't just listing terms. We want to dig into how camera work, how lighting, basically how these technical codes shape the meaning, shape how you, the viewer, are supposed to feel.
That's absolutely right. It's crucial, really, for anyone in media or even just watching closely. You have to see that a technical choice isn't just technical. It's always, always a narrative choice. Every decision, about the lens, the angle, where you put the lights, it's a huge part of the media product. It impacts mood, builds tension, it guides you through the story. And we're going to show these aren't just happy accidents, they're intentional codes.
Okay, perfect. So let's unpack that, starting with maybe the most fundamental thing, camera shots. We're not just talking distance, right? It's more about like the psychological connection.
Exactly. Psychological distance. Let's start big picture with the long shot. So the subject looks small, tiny even, lots of space around them. That technical choice, it immediately tells you something specific.
Which
The
is
environment is dominant, the setting is king here.
right. So if you see like one person in a huge desert or dwarfed by giant city buildings, what's the deeper message beyond just here's where they are?
Well, it often dials down their agency, their power as an individual. It suggests isolation, maybe vulnerability, or that they're up against something massive, forces bigger than themselves. And yeah, sure, it works as an establishing shot, sets the scene geographically, but the deeper thing is diminishing the human element, making the setting feel, well, really consequential.
Okay. Then we move in a bit closer to the mid shot. This feels like the standard shot, right? Often waist up. Why is this one so common, especially for dialogue?
It really is the workhorse. It hits that perfect balance, that sweet spot between, let's say, intimacy and context. You get enough visual information to connect with the character. You can read their face, see important nonverbal stuff.
Like body language.
Exactly, like nervously crossed arms or a subtle shift in how they stand. Things you need for dialogue scenes. But you still see enough of the background to remember where they are, the immediate environment. It's very relatable. It grounds the conversation.
But if the goal is pure emotion, ditching the background distractions, that's when we get to the close-up, or even the extreme close-up. This is where you really force that
No,
connection.
absolutely. When you go into a close-up, you're cutting out everything else, everything. It's just the character's face, their reaction, and this creates something powerful, what some call physiological synchronicity.
Meaning.
Meaning you, the viewer, you almost can't help but mirror that emotion. You feel it with them.
Yeah, the source has had a great example. You don't need dialogue to explain sadness if you show a single tear in close-up. That small detail, it just tells the whole story.
Precisely. And then if you need to crank up the intensity, the urgency, you push even further into the extreme close-up. Technically, it's about proximity, being super close. But narratively, it's about obsession, either obsession with a feeling, like sheer terror, or obsession with a tiny, critical detail.
Like the glint of metal example.
Yeah, exactly like that. That sudden, intense focus on, say, a knife handle sticking out of a pocket, that level of focus, it screams foreshadowing. It creates this immediate, almost subconscious tension about what's coming later, like violence.
Wow, yeah. That really shows the power just in how close you get. Which leads us perfectly into the next section, angles. Manipulating how we see power in space.
Angles are all about hierarchy, defining the power dynamics in the scene, plain and simple. Let's start with the low angle shot. Camera's down low, near the ground, looking up.
And the immediate effect that has on whatever you're filming.
It makes them look powerful, stronger, bigger, more imposing, maybe even menacing. If you want a villain or just a huge building to feel dominant, overwhelming, low angle is your go-to technical code. It's a classic. The sources mentioned, The Dark Knight, right, making the Joker look larger than life, dangerous.
Right. And then the opposite. If you want to make someone seem weak or vulnerable, maybe doomed, you look down on them. The high angle shot.
Exactly. A high angle visually shrinks the character in the frame. It immediately tells the audience, this person might be in danger or overwhelmed or just not in control, but there's a nuance there too. It's not always just vulnerability.
Oh, what else?
Sometimes it suggests surveillance. Think about CCTV cameras. They're usually mounted high up, so that high angle can automatically inject this feeling of maybe paranoia, like someone's being watched, controlled by something unseen.
That's interesting. Taking that idea of height even further, we get the ultimate top-down view, the aerial shot or bird's eye view.
Right, often done with cranes or drones these days, helicopters too. The camera basically becomes this all-seeing eye. Its main job, yeah, is geography. The ultimate establishing shot for huge landscapes, big cities, shows the scale, but narratively, it can make the subjects look completely insignificant, utterly alone against this vast world. It's almost like fate looking down.
Okay, and one more angle to cover, a bit different, the over-the-shoulder shot.
Ah, yes. This one is all about pulling the audience in. By placing the camera, and therefore you, the viewer, just behind one character's shoulder, looking towards another, it makes you feel like you're right there, part of the conversation, part of the action. It creates intimacy, inclusion, like you're the third person in the room.
So we've got shots defining distance and emotion, angles defining power and perspective. But what happens when the camera itself starts moving? Let's get into section three, camera movement. What's the main difference between, say, moving the camera on a fixed point versus the camera actually traveling through space?
That's the key distinction. Is the camera body itself moving or is it rotating from a fixed spot? If the camera stays put, usually on a tripod for stability, for that smooth look, then we're talking rotations, moving side to side, horizontally. That's panning, super common for following someone walking or for revealing a wide vista slowly. Keeps them framed nicely.
And the vertical version, looking up or down?
That's tilting, still from a fixed point, just up or down.
Why might you choose a tilt, say, up a tall building, instead of just using a wide shot to show the whole thing?
Oh, well, to tilt gives you an experiential reveal. It mimics how a person would actually look up, tilting slowly up that skyscraper. It forces you to feel the scale, the time it takes to see it all. It emphasizes the verticality in a controlled way. It could be a building, could be someone getting up off the floor.
Got it. Yeah. Okay, so that's fixed point. But when the camera itself moves through the scene, that's tracking. Or dolly shots.
Exactly. Now the camera body is physically moving. Often it's put on a dolly, which might run on tracks. And the whole point there is smoothness, flawless cinematic motion. You use tracking shots to stay with the character as they move through a complex space, like a chase down a hallway or following someone through a crowded party. It lets the viewer follow the action smoothly without lots of jarring cuts. Very immersive.
And then there's the opposite of smooth, the deliberate choice to make it shaky. The handheld effect.
Yes. And this is fascinating because it's choosing technical imperfection for effect. You hold the camera, no stabilizers, maybe while walking or running, and you introduce that wobble, that shake, that instability. It's a powerful code. It shouts chaos, urgency, danger. Sometimes it gives it a raw documentary feel. It tells you, the audience, straight up, things are unstable here, and you're right in the thick of it, experiencing it physically alongside the character.
That intentional shake.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a brilliant example of using a technical choice for a really visceral gut feeling. Okay, critical shift now. Let's talk about section four, lighting. Because lighting isn't just about being able to see. It works with the camera work to create mood, depth, these technical codes.
Absolutely. If the camera places you in the space and connects you emotionally, lighting paints the tone, the texture. You can figure out the lighting's purpose by looking closely at the shadows and highlights. Where's the light coming from? How strong is it? You can get complex, too. Maybe using two lights, different colors, like a cool blue and a warm orange on someone's face, suggests internal conflict, complexity.
When filmmakers really need control, though, what's the standard setup they rely on? Not just relying on sunlight, I assume.
Well, natural light can be beautiful, creative, but it's unpredictable. Changes constantly might be too harsh. So for control, especially in drama, you turn to studio lighting. And the absolute bedrock of studio lighting for creating depth and shape. That's the three-point lighting setup. This is fundamental.
Okay, let's break that down. 3 points, what are they?
First, the key light. This is your main light source, the brightest. Does most of the heavy lifting for illumination. Second, the fill light. This one's softer. Its job is basically to fill in to reduce the harsh shadows created by the key light. It controls the contrast level. And third, the backlight. Sometimes called a rim light or hair light. This hits the subject from behind, maybe slightly above. Its job is crucial. It separates the subject from the background, creates that outline, that definition, so they pop out and don't look flat. Adds dimension.
Key, fill, back. Got it. That defines the shape, the depth. But what about the overall mood? We hear about high key and low key lighting all the time. What do those actually signal narratively?
Yeah, this is pure genre coding, really. High key lighting. Think bright, minimal shadows, very even illumination, low contrast between light and dark areas. This code almost always signals positivity. Comedies, lighthearted dramas, musicals, scenes of optimism or safety. It visually feels open, clear, nothing hidden.
And the flip side.
Yeah. Low key lighting. This is all about shadows and contrast. High contrast. large parts of the frame might be plunged into darkness. This is the language of film noir thrillers, horror movies. Why? Because shadows naturally suggest mystery, tension, danger, the unknown lurking just out of sight.
So whether it's shaping natural light or setting up studio lights, getting the intensity right is crucial, especially for tricky situations like filming at night or in really dark interiors.
Oh, absolutely vital. It's about precision. The source materials point out that lighting pros use tools, light meters, for instance. These measure the exact amount of light hitting the subject. That technical data tells the camera operator precisely what settings they need. It ensures the intended mood, whether it's that bright high-key look or the shadowy low-key mystery, comes across exactly as planned for you, the audience.
Okay, this has really been a deep dive into the grammar, the nuts and bolts of how visual media speaks to us. We've gone beyond just definitions. We've identified how different shots, angles, camera movements, you know, the pan, the tilt, the track, even that wobble, they all function as deliberate codes.
Exactly. And we've seen how lighting, using that three-point setup or choosing between high-key brightness and low-key shadow, fundamentally sets the scene's mood. The big takeaway, really, for you listening, is to grasp that every single one of these technical choices is a powerful narrative decision. Every single one. A low angle makes a character feel powerful. A handheld track injects chaos. A carefully placed backlight creates depth. These aren't accidents. They're the tools crafting meaning, pulling you in.
Right. And to leave you with something to think about, building on that idea of intentional imperfection we touched on. We talked about the difference between a perfectly smooth dolly track, very controlled, versus that deliberate, unstable wobble from a handheld camera. Now, technical codes are often about precision and control. Why is that deliberate imperfection, that shaky wobble, sometimes the most powerful way to communicate raw fear or chaos or sheer urgency? Think about how breaking that smoothness, destabilizing the image itself, how that fundamentally shifts your emotional reality as a viewer right there in the moment.